Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sam's, saluting its client, Walt Disney World, for its $28 million of philanthropic support each year for children and families in Central Florida. I'm Gary Hunter of Hopping Green and Sam's.
And the Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. WFSU-FM Tallahassee and other Florida public radio stations. From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
A move by Mitt Romney to include some of Ron Paul's ideas and his delegates at the Republican National Convention is being looked at as a model for Republicans in the Florida legislature.
It's important that the party open up their tent to all different types of suggestions and recommendations from people that are Republicans.
The only election supervisor in the state who has not yet agreed to Florida's early voting changes says he's being strong-armed by officials.
They really want you to fall in line. They've basically told us we need to go along with and show our solidarity with the other 62 counties.
Crooks are already finding ways around Florida's new law reforming personal injury protection insurance, and we hear how public school officials are now worried about the increased cost of having healthier food options in cafeterias. I'm Trimel Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. No one exactly knows how Tropical Storm Isaac will impact the state of Florida, but officials are preparing for the worst just as the Republican National Convention gets underway next week. The storm strengthened slightly as it spun toward the Dominican Republic and vulnerable Haiti today, threatening to bring punishing rains but unlikely to gain enough steam to strike as a hurricane. Forecasters now expect the storm to stay below hurricane force until it's in the Gulf of Mexico. It's expected to stay to the west of Tampa, where the Republican National Convention starts Monday, though there is still an outside chance it could hit there. Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn has been making the media rounds trying to settle uneasy visitors.
All that would mean would be some heavy rain. Tampa is really, really excited about hosting the RNC. We don't have any plans to cancel it. The decision on the proceedings would be the RNC's decision. My role would be to call the evacuation, and at this point, we are not looking at doing that.
Florida Emergency Management Director Brian Kuhn says delegates arriving to the Republican National Convention will also be receiving instructions should the storm actually hit.
Sure, our meteorology team worked with our external affairs to put together a brochure that the RNC can put in all the welcome packets for the delegates. It helps explain riptides and what to look for on the beach, because many of them will be staying in beachfront hotels.
And Governor Rick Scott is urging Floridians to follow the usual hurricane preparedness procedures.
Get ready. Get 72 hours worth of supplies. Make sure you have water, you know, food. Make sure everybody has a plan. Make sure your family knows where you are. Make sure, you know, if you're separated from other members of your family, that, you know, you tell them where you are. So everybody has a plan. You can, you know, the best thing to do is get on FloridaDisaster.org, and it lists what you ought to be doing. But, you know, just track this.
Forecaster Eric Blake of the U.S. National Hurricane Center said it is too early to know the storm's exact course, though projections now indicate the storm could make landfall near the Alabama-Mississippi border. Ahead of next week's Republican National Convention, the party and its presidential frontrunner, Mitt Romney, have made a compromise to allow some delegates who support Texas Congressman Ron Paul to have a seat at the nominating table. As Jessica Palumbo reports, some Florida Republicans are saying this inclusiveness should be a model for the state Republican Party.
Sally Bradshaw is a Republican strategist who has worked on state and federal campaigns for more than two decades.
I'm currently working with Speaker-designate of the Florida House, Will Weatherford, and the Republican House Campaign Committee, and I have worked in the past as the Chief of Staff to Governor Jeb Bush and managed two of his three campaigns.
Bradshaw says for Libertarian-leaning Ron Paul to have had a shot at the Republican nomination, he would have had to carry the majority of five states during the primary. And though he didn't, he and his vocal supporters have still managed to get some of his ideas incorporated into the Republican Party platform.
There's a heavy focus on the U.S. Constitution, which is a new section of the platform. There's the discussion of putting together a panel on the gold standard. So I think you've seen a real effort by the Romney campaign.
But that's not good enough for some of Ron Paul's Florida supporters. David Foster of Tallahassee is hoping to carry on Paul's legacy after he retires next year with his grassroots group called Liberty Avengers, which tries to help elect candidates with similar platforms. He says Romney's last-minute compromise feels like pandering, and he and fellow Paul supporters will not get behind Romney.
The thing that frustrates me the most is they have an opportunity right now to expand the Republican base. And so it's almost as if they're trying to throw the election because they're not embracing this young movement of people that has come forward.
But one longtime Republican Florida lawmaker, Senator Mike Fasano, says there's always going to be some disagreement about candidates within a party, and he applauds Romney's inclusiveness.
It's important that the party open up their tent to all different types of suggestions and recommendations from people that are Republicans.
That's especially needed right now within the Florida Republican Party, he says. Fasano has served in both state chambers for the past 18 years, and he'll be returning to the House of Representatives next session. This year, he and a handful of other Republicans diverged with the Senate Majority Party when they voted against one of the party's priority bills, which would have turned over 11 state prisons to private companies.
And the president of the Senate, who happens to be a Republican, remove me as a chairman because of that. That's not what we want as a party. We should welcome everyone who has an idea.
And further highlighting a division in his party, Fasano says some Republican lawmakers seem to consistently vote based on the goals of the conservative Tea Party, which backed political newcomer Rick Scott for governor in 2010. But he's encouraged by what he sees as more independent-thinking Republicans who are now stepping in to lead the Florida legislature.
People like Will Weatherford, who will be the Speaker of the House come November. Future leaders, people like Richard Corcoran and Jack Latvala, they just don't follow based on this is what this particular group wants you to do. And I believe that is a good thing for our party.
And Sally Bradshaw says, overall, the Florida Republican Party is a uniform group with similar goals.
The Tea Party, to their great credit, has refocused our party in some ways on the issues that matter. We believe in less government. We believe the tax dollars we send to Tallahassee and to Washington should be spent wisely.
And with about 25 years' experience on campaigns, she says she's rarely seen her party so unified as they are right now around defeating President Barack Obama in November. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
And back on this convention, Democrats want to cause a stir or at least stay in the conversation while the spotlight is on the Republicans next week at the GOP convention in Tampa. President Barack Obama and his campaign are seeking to counter Mitt Romney's message and try to head off any dramatic climb for the Republican challenger in post-convention polls. Obama and Vice President Joe Biden will campaign in four battleground states, and Obama's campaign will hold events around the country aimed at women voters. In Tampa, Democrats plan daily events with party officials and middle-class Americans to counter the Republican ticket. The activity will head into the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, beginning September 4th. And I will be there bringing you coverage from both the RNC next week and the DNC. Still to come on Capitol Report, will that new law reforming Florida's personal injury protection insurance really reduce fraud? It seems the crooks are already looking for loopholes.
They would basically rent their physician licenses to massage therapists and or chiropractors to help them get their claims filed, which I found quite convenient.
A new proposal already in the works in the 2013 legislative session would do away with state employees' unused sick leave and vacation time.
Sounds like a great recruiting pitch. Come serve the people of Florida. You may not get a raise. You may not be able to take your leave. You may have to pay 25% of your salary for health benefits. Come serve the people of Florida.
And school lunches are now healthier, but districts worry they could also be budget busters.
You know that also our whole wheat products are more expensive. Brown rice is more expensive than white rice. So these changes are going to cost us money.
The Florida Department of State is asking a federal court to take a second look at pre-clearing Florida's new early voting rules. It's the last piece of the new voting law that hasn't been approved yet. As Regan McCarthy reports, the court said it might pre-clear the law if the five affected counties agree to hold early voting for the maximum number of hours allowed. So far, only four of the five counties have said they will.
Because of a history of discrimination, five Florida counties have to get approval from the federal government before they can make changes in the way they hold elections. Those counties are Hardy, Hendry, Hillsborough, Collier, and Monroe. Bit by bit, the federal government has been approving or pre-clearing parts of Florida's elections overhaul. Now all that's left is a change in early voting times, and the Department of State's Chris Cate says he expects that rule to be pre-cleared too.
We're very close now to getting last year's bill approved, and we hope that we'll have a ruling on early voting soon, and we expect a positive ruling that's going to benefit the voters of Florida.
Last week, a federal court actually did rule on the state's early voting changes, finding the new law could reduce access to the polls, especially for African-American voters. The changes reduce the number of days supervisors can hold early voting from 14 days to 8 days and allow a minimum of 48 hours of voting. But the court said if supervisors in the five affected counties promise to hold early voting for the maximum number of hours allowed under the new rule, it will likely okay the plan. So far, Cate says four of the five supervisors have agreed.
Four of the counties told us that they're going to use the maximum number of hours, so we provided that information to the court so that the court can now actually make a ruling on the actual hours rather than the unknown number of the minimum to maximum that was allowed under the new early voting law.
The one election supervisor who didn't go along with the plan is Harry Sawyer from Monroe County. Sawyer says he thinks the change will hurt voter turnout, and he adds he doesn't appreciate the pressure he feels Florida officials have been putting on him to conform.
They really want you to fall in line. They've basically told us We need to go along and show our solidarity with the other 62 counties, to show the people of the state of Florida that we can agree, to show the people of the country that Florida can get together and come under this. But still, it's still, I believe, we're looking at the way this is set up and the way that it's put together. We're still looking at a problem with access to the people to get in and vote.
Sawyer, a Republican, says he feels like the Florida government's trying to strong-arm the election supervisors into doing something he doesn't think is right. Meanwhile, elections officials in Collier County see the situation a little differently.
Our interaction with the Secretary of State has been very cordial and positive, and in our view, not the least bit coercive.
That's Tim Durham, Collier County's Chief Deputy Supervisor of Elections. He says he thinks the new law will actually give voters more opportunities to visit the polls, because if election supervisors use the maximum number of hours, the polls will be open before people head to work and after they finish up. Meanwhile, Florida Governor Rick Scott has hinted he's prepared to remove Sawyer as Monroe County's Supervisor of Elections, saying he's willing to take, quote, all necessary action to make sure the supervisor does his duty under the state law to implement the system.
The court has said they want to make sure that in the five counties that are under the Voting Rights Act have the 96 hours. I'm going to make sure that happens.
Scott says he can remove the supervisors who aren't doing their duty, but Sawyer says Scott's statements don't make sense. He points out the new law hasn't been pre-cleared yet for his county and says he's following the law that has been. The Department of State has submitted plans drawn up by the four counties to hold early voting for the maximum number of hours allowed. Officials say the court could grant or deny pre-clearance on the early voting changes as a whole, or could make a decision just for those four counties. Officials hope to get all decisions made before early voting starts for the November elections, with the goal of all counties operating under the same elections law. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Much of this year's Florida legislative session dealt with the issue of reforming the state's personal injury protection, or PIP, auto insurance law. Lawmakers wound up passing a reform measure, but Tom Flanagan reports there are already questions about whether it will work as advertised.
Back during the 2012 lawmaking session, all sorts of people were calling for changes to Florida's 41-year-old requirement that all motorists carry a minimum of $10,000 in personal injury protection coverage. One of these people was Florida Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater. Here he appeared on a web broadcast produced by the Florida Chamber of Commerce, in which he discussed the matter with Chamber Vice President David Hart.
So when he talks about this fraud number being $1 billion, well, that's because how could premiums go up $1 billion across all Floridians, now picking up that tab, when actually there's fewer accidents?
The answer, Atwater said, was that fraudsters, including unscrupulous lawyers, doctors, and treatment clinics, were staging car wrecks and providing bogus care to make-believe victims. Lawmakers finally hammered out a hybrid PIP reform. It would force those injured in traffic accidents to seek medical attention within 14 days from a hospital or licensed physician. Follow-up care would have to be ordered by qualified medical professionals before victims could seek the maximum $10,000 benefit. And no treatment done by acupuncturists or massage therapists would be covered. Lisa Miller is a private insurance consultant who worked for the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation when Jeb Bush was governor. She came across a flyer advertising the services of a South Florida company before the ink on the new law was even dry.
An organization that was advertising that they would basically rent their physician licenses to massage therapists and or chiropractors to help them get their claims filed, which I found quite convenient as it was floating around the minute the legislation was signed.
For that reason alone, Miller has some concerns about a new study released by Pinnacle Actuaries and commissioned by the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. The study projected real premium savings for Florida's auto insurance policyholders as a result of PIP reform. Donovan Brown with the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America says it's not a bad study. He just thinks it leaves some things out.
We also know the study can't calculate the scope of how trial attorneys might try to attack the cost savings in the law.
And even if all those savings are ultimately realized, it may not really amount to much. The Florida Office of Insurance Regulation points out that PIP represents only about 20% of the average car owner's total insurance premium. So despite the Pinnacle study's rosy projections, Steve Posiosk with the American Consumer Institute Center for Citizen Research thinks auto insurance savings, if any, may be quite a ways off.
All of those things, unfortunately, are going to interfere and delay the implementation of fraud-fighting tools. And when that happens, that means those costs won't be reduced, which means consumers won't see the benefits.
Walter Dartland with the Consumer Federation of the Southeast doubts there will be any savings ever. He lobbied heavily against fraud and for PIP reform during the legislative session. He remembers the promises from the insurance industry that reforms would bring huge reductions in premiums almost overnight.
What happens is they don't. They say, well, you know, inflation brought it up to where it was before, and there's still stuff going on. And it's very frustrating, and you can understand why surveys that we have done with the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud suggest that the insurance industry is one of the least respected and believed in businesses in the country.
Meanwhile, the consensus seems to be growing that still more changes to Florida's auto insurance laws may be needed, perhaps as early as the 2013 lawmaking session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. State employees hoping to make the most of their vacation time might want to use it now rather than later. State officials are working with the Florida legislature to shore up what they see as a multi-million dollar liability in the budget by reducing the amount of money employees can receive for unused vacation time and sick leave. But as Sasha Cordner reports, several state employees say legislation to do that will further dishearten state workers who have taken cuts and gone without a pay raise for several years.
Currently, employees who leave state employment can get a payout for the amount of hours they've accrued for their annual leave. And under current law, state workers may also receive payment for a portion of their sick leave at the time of retirement, death, or termination after 10 years of service. But Republican Representative Debbie Mayfield wants to eliminate the ability of state employees to carry over annual leave into the next calendar year. That means any future unused vacation time accumulated would be lost, and sick leave payouts could also be taken away for new hires. Mayfield failed to get that provision passed last session, but says she's working on a new proposal for 2013. The state is liable for $677 million, and she wants to find a solution that's fair for both employees and the taxpayers of Florida. But some state employees disagree.
They just want to find a sneaky way to cheat out of paying their bills. And they're doing it to the employees that have been working there retroactively. There's no grandfathering in here.
Phil Curtis is a correctional officer who's quitting his work at the Charlotte Correctional Institution in about 2 weeks. The 61-year-old says he's been let down by all the cuts he's had to face over the years. And he says things are getting worse under Governor Rick Scott's regime.
Mr. Rick Scott has decided he can bully us all around, and he's doing it to us. He has a lot of very highly paid lawyers that are able to do this to cleverly cheat people out of what the state owes them.
Scott Hoffman is a police officer in the Florida Panhandle who's worked with the state for 25 years and has about 600 hours he's expecting to get paid for working state holidays and weekends. And he'll soon be retiring in the next couple of months. Hoffman says he agrees the state is facing a huge liability. He adds there might even be some people who abuse the payout system by having excessive amounts of hours. But he says those hours and what is paid to employees needs to be put in perspective.
When you really look at the truth of sick leave, we only get paid one-fourth of the sick leave that we have at the end of the career. In reality, you're getting a quarter for your dollar, and they cap it at a certain amount. Rest of it, you lose.
Hoffman says after spending years on the force, he's gone 7 years without a pay raise, had to contribute 3% toward his retirement, and now he says it's time for the state to pay up, a sentiment shared by Republican Senator Mike Fasano of Newport Richey.
I do not believe we should change it for those that have already earned it, but it is costing the states, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to pay out days that are not being used. So if we're going to change it, and I believe we should, it should be for future employees that are hired after a certain date, with them understanding the new rules that are put in place.
But that change could cause unions to get involved, like the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME. It represents about 55,000 state workers, and the group's spokesman, Doug Martin, says they're continually getting disillusioned. He says changing the policy will make it hard to entice people to work for the state.
Sounds like a great recruiting pitch. Come serve the people of Florida. You may not get a raise. You may not be able to take your leave. You may have to pay 25% of your salary for health benefits. Come serve the people of Florida.
AFSCME played a role in getting Representative Mayfield to remove the on-use sick and pay leave provision from her 2012 bill, and he says he hopes to work with Representative Mayfield again in the future. Mayfield is currently working to craft the 2013 proposal with several state officials. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Finally, school is back in session for more than 2.5 million public school students in Florida, and there are big changes in the way schools are going about feeding them. Lynn Hatter reports the menu calls for healthier lunches and more fruits and vegetables, but whether the kids will eat them and whether schools can afford the healthier food is another matter.
It's lunchtime here at Tallahassee's Cobb Middle School, and 6th grader Jesse Lowe is chowing down on a Chick-fil-A sandwich and an ice cream bar he bought from the school. He admits it's not exactly the world's healthiest lunch.
They're mostly serving, like, fattening foods here, as you can see what I'm eating, except for the water. But we need more fruit, I think. I mean, they're serving peaches, too, but that's... I haven't seen tons of people grab those.
Jesse says most days he usually goes for the school's food and says his favorite meals are the chicken wraps, but the pizza is pretty good too.
Yeah, and it actually tastes kind of like Domino's.
And that pizza has gone through a bit of an overhaul this year, along with other traditional lunch staples, after the federal government handed down new rules for what can and can't be served to kids in the federally backed school lunch program. Whole milk has been replaced by fat-free and reduced-fat options, and students are required to take either a fruit or a vegetable during lunch. Portion sizes will also be smaller, and pastas and breads will have to be made from whole grains. So back to that pizza, which is now on a whole wheat crust.
We're actually using pureed sweet potatoes as part of the marinara sauce, which enables you to give them more of the orange vegetable that's a requirement. So now you got not only your red sauce, but your red sauce mixed with a sweet potato puree, and you're still within the guidelines. You're giving it a new flavor profile, and it's something else that the kids like.
That's Chef Anthony Terrell. The Leon County School District brought him in as a consultant to help them craft healthier meals. There are baked chicken fingers instead of fried ones, brightly colored salads with feta cheese instead of cheddar. Healthier meals don't have to spell the end of traditional lunch staples like pizza and french fries. The state is trying to encourage kids to eat their fruits and veggies now and not throw them away. The lunch changes are part of a national push for healthier eating and living. And Cobb Middle School 8th grader Sydney Jones says she supports the changes.
Because some people that are overweight can lose like the weight they need to or they want to or the doctor wants them to. So if they lose the weight, it's like... It's because of either the school and themselves helping. So, and America has a lot of diabetes here now, so maybe better for everybody.
Although she's not completely enthused with some of the vegetable choices.
I don't like okra, but a lot of people do like okra. So if somebody likes okra, they can eat okra.
If you opt not to eat something on your plate and if it's in a container of some sort, you can go take it to a share table and put it there and leave it for someone else.
Robin Safley is with the Florida Department of Agriculture, and she heads up the school lunch program. She says introducing things like a vegetable of the week and a sharing table helps minimize waste. And districts across the state are literally pinching pennies to be able to afford the new rules.
Our whole wheat products are more expensive. Brown rice is more expensive than white rice. So these changes are going to cost us money.
Kathy Reed heads up the Leon County School Lunch Program, and she says all those fresh fruits and vegetables and whole wheat pasta noodles are pricey. School districts are eligible for a 6 cents per meal increase in federal funding once they've gotten their menus approved by state officials. But Reed says that doesn't go very far in making up for what districts are spending just to comply with the rules.
I'm going to get 6 cents more per meal, but it's going to cost me up to 25 cents more for that additional piece of fruit or a serving of vegetables. So it doesn't add up.
So to help control costs, the district has joined up with several others to increase their purchasing power. They've also turned to local growers to provide the produce. And those are things that the Florida Department of Agriculture's Robin Safley encourages.
If we can marry up our farmers with our school system and with the bulk that our school system buys in that new market, we can hopefully push down the price of the product and get more fresh product that's Florida grown into the schools and lower the cost.
Safley and Leon County's Kathy Reed say they believe the changes to the lunch program are positive, but in the short term, Reed says it's going to be expensive until they can get more retailers in the supply chain to get on board. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cotts provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Trimmel Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org.
Capitol Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sam's, saluting its client Walt Disney World for its $28 million of philanthropic support each year for children and families in Central Florida. I'm Gary Hunter of Hopping Green and Sam's.
And the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. WFSU-FM Tallahassee and other Florida Public Radio stations. This is the Florida Public Radio Network.